that's okay. That's fine. This is a fine song.
No woman of right. No woman of right. Cause I remember when we used to sit in a government yard in trench town. Of observing the hypocrites. Yeah. Mingle with the good people we.
Ready when you are.
So dry your tears, I say.
Okay, no.
Yeah. No woman no cry.
Good morning. This is Joanne Bowman, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. We started off the program this morning with another Bob Marley song, which was perfectly timed because I was just handed a note that says that Bob Marley's house has been made into a protected heritage site. The house where Bob Marley lived has been designated a protected national heritage site. The Kingston home of Marley, who died of cancer in the U.S. in 1981, is now a recording studio and museum displaying memorabilia. Jamaica's cultural minister, Maxine Henry Wilson, said the tribute recognized all the reggae superstar had done to promote his Caribbean homeland overseas. A plaque at the house, marking the occasion and unveiled by his daughter Stephanie, bears lyrics from the singer's hit song, Trenchtown Rock. One good thing about music, when it hits you, feel no pain. Well, that's an excellent way to start the morning. I hope the listening audience, you're all doing well. We're going to be talking this morning about some upcoming ballot measures that will be coming to a ballot near you either in May of this year or November of this year. And I wanted to just kind of get people to start thinking about the impact of some of these ballot measures. So if you have a favorite one or a pet peeve one, give me a call at 503-231-8187 and we can talk about them. I've got a few that I want to highlight and actually find out how you feel about them in particular. And, of course, it's another election season, so there are hundreds of ballot measures out currently being circulated. As we know, all of them will not make the ballot, but there are many of them that seem to have a theme this year that I wanted to talk about, and it's especially true as it relates to health care. As you know, or as you may not know, there are actually several initiatives being circulated now that actually would change the healthcare landscape here in Oregon. Most people may not know, especially after if you listen to the President's State of the Union address, you would probably think that everybody has healthcare and there's not a problem in healthcare. So if you only listen to the President's State of the Union address, you would be left with the very false impression that somehow it's only the very rich people that actually need to save and be concerned and worried about health care. His proposal was only around creating tax advantages for people who are fortunate enough to be able to save money for for really severe health-related issues that would require a long hospitalization. It's really ironic when you think about the sheer arrogance of that proposal, because nowhere was it mentioned the 40 million people who absolutely have no health coverage at all. And so when you think about who is uninsured, especially as we talk about who's uninsured in Oregon, well, we know low-wage workers have no health coverage. We know most people who are working for very small businesses have no health coverage. We know most people who are self-employed have no health coverage. We know people of color are less likely to have health coverage. People who work in part-time jobs and temporary jobs, people who live in rural areas, or people who have previously had severe health-related issues are the people who make up the uninsured in this country. And that's also true right here in Oregon. And the key reasons why we have this really big gap in who has health coverage and who doesn't is really simple. Few employers nowadays offer a comprehensive health care package. And so if you think about most people get their health coverage through having a 40-hour-a-week employment, and the employer provides that health coverage. So if fewer employers are offering health coverage, that means there are less of us who actually would be covered. The other issue is that health insurance plans are radically changing. They're charging much higher premiums and significantly higher co-payments, which again is shifting the health care costs onto the individual. And, of course, employers are shifting more of the costs for health care coverage onto the employees. Where less than 10 years ago, most employers provided 100% coverage for the individual and some different level of coverage for their dependents. Nowadays, that is not the case. More people are working for very small employers who are less likely to be able to provide some basic level of health coverage. In Oregon, 53% of the people who currently have health coverage have that coverage because their employer provides that health coverage. 5% of Oregonians currently have private health insurance, which means as an individual, 5% of working adults in Oregon have had to go and find health coverage, and they're paying for it themselves individually. We know that 15% of people in Oregon are covered by Medicaid, 10% are covered by Medicare, and we have 16% of our population who's uninsured. And so there are going to be many, many, many measures that are out being circulated now to try to address this large uninsured population in our state. And the question is whether or not the proposals that are being circulated will fundamentally change health insurance coverage in the state of Oregon. Before I get into the particular measures, I want to give you some more kind of statistics about health care in Oregon. We know that people of color are more likely to be uninsured than whites. While 14.5% of whites are uninsured in the United States, 35.7% of Hispanics are uninsured, and 20.8% of African Americans are uninsured. What we know is that people who live in rural areas are less likely to have health care as compared to people who live in urban communities. What we know is that people who live in rural communities tend to have lower incomes and tend to have less access to health care. Nearly 20%, in fact, of the uninsured population currently lives in rural communities. So those are just a little bit of facts. I don't want to overwhelm you. I know it's early in the morning. Too many facts will make you just kind of glaze over. But I wanted to make sure that you had some basic understanding of the choices that we're going to be confronted with as we get to the ballot box this year. And so as you may know, one of the measures that I believe is really close to being certified is Ballot Measure 40, which is a constitutional amendment that would actually state in Oregon's Constitution that health care is a right for people who live in the state of Oregon. Really cut and dry, that initiative itself is. But what it also does is require the legislative body to actually adopt by 2007, by 2009, a comprehensive fix to our current health care system. So here's the questions I have for you in regard to Ballot Measure 40. Do you believe that the legislature, which is which is the group that has not done an effective job of funding our public education system, has not done an effective job of equalizing how resources are distributed through the state. Do you really, listening audience, have any confidence that this legislative body will, in fact, fix our health care system and make it more equitable and more fair for all the people that live within our state borders? That's my question to you. I'm also always a little anxious when anybody wants to change the Constitution because, as you know, we're pretty schizophrenic in the state when it comes to our Constitution. It's pretty ironic that in 2004, we put into our Constitution discrimination against gay and lesbians getting married. And in 2000, we took out discriminatory language that was discriminatory against people of color that had been left in our Constitution since the days of Jim Crow. And so it's kind of ironic that we can't figure out what's appropriate and what isn't appropriate to have in our Constitution. So that's one of the big ballot measures around health care that there seems to be a lot of interest in, and also a lot of people who think we have to do something. So if not this, then what? 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Tell me what you think about this particular ballot measure. I actually love the idea of stating health care as a right. I believe it absolutely is one of those fundamental rights like clean air and clean water and being free from government intervention in your personal life. I think it's one of those basic common sense kind of activities that, in fact, should be part of what we believe as a community, especially when you're trying to build a community that's inclusive of everyone. I also know that there are a couple of other healthcare ballot measures being circulated. I'm unsure at this time whether any of them will actually make the ballot, but I did want to mention a couple more. There's a measure that would increase the tobacco tax to provide healthcare coverage for all uninsured children in the state of Oregon. This measure is called the Family Health and Wellness Act of 2006. It's being promoted by several legislators, a bipartisan legislative group, including Rep. Bill Dalto, Representative Mitch Greenlick, Senator Ben Westland, and Senator Alan Bates. This would be a statutory change. And it would, as I said, it would cover the over 100,000 children who currently are not covered by health care. And this is one of those that, you know, how could you be against covering children? But my question becomes, if you take out the group of people who most people agree are appropriate to cover, then what you leave are people that people are making judgment calls about whether or not they are worthy of having health coverage. So if you have a measure that just covers children, then it's really easy for some of our elected leaders to then say, we solved the problem. Because after all the children are covered. But if mom and dad aren't covered, just like our president, they don't see that as an issue. And so in my opinion, this we should not be taking kids out. I think anybody deserves to have access to preventive health care. And in fact, we already know data shows that if people have the ability to go to the doctors in advance, you can mitigate the costs associated with just going to the emergency room when that's your last resort, and the emergency room stops becoming the healthcare provider of last resort. So there is a grassroots effort, and there are members of the Tobacco Tax Restoration Coalition that are proposing this measure. And as I said, there are people out collecting signatures for this measure right now. But, you know, for me, there's also the other question. So what this measure says to me is that if you smoke tobacco, then you're responsible for all the uninsured children in the state of Oregon, which I find a bit appalling, that we would segregate one segment of the community and hold them totally responsible for providing health care coverage for another segment of our population. This measure would increase the tobacco tax by as much as 75 cents and would dedicate those dollars to health care coverage. So that is number two. It's a statutory change, so 75,000 signatures is what, a little over 75,000 signatures is what would be required to put that on the ballot. And the question is whether or not, with all the other things on the ballot, this is going to rise up and people are going to see this as something that is necessary. And again, I've done my editorial, so I'll leave that one alone. It's kind of, like I said, especially if the title is Oregon Kids Program, which I believe is what's going to be the ballot title. But it definitely shows how people, you know, how wording of these measures actually position these measures to either do very good things or to do very bad things. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Let's see, and those two were healthcare related. I want to get back to one that's been really one of my pet peeves for a while, and I actually want to talk about a Payday Loan Reform Act of 2006. Many people may know that we've got on just about every corner, especially in very low-income communities, payday loan, car title loan companies, and these are legal loan shark operations that have the ability to charge to impose interest rates as high as 400% on what are supposed to be small loans to individuals who are in a state of crisis. There is a measure that's being circulated I'm checking to see who the author of this loan is. I will keep looking for that information about it's Our Oregon is actually the organization that's actually promoting this particular ballot measure. You can go to www.ouroregon.org for more information. And this really is, I see this ballot measure as really an issue of fairness. If it is not legal to charge middle class and upper middle class people a 400% interest rate, how could we have a law in Oregon that makes it legal to charge poor people such an exorbitant interest rate with no accountability whatsoever? I've actually heard from many people who have been lulled into taking out these legal loan shark type loans, and it's heartbreaking to hear the stories that people tell about, you know, having an emergency and having to go and get a quick loan. And the way they're set up is they're set up to make sure that you default because the interest rate is so high that you never, ever, ever end up paying the principal. You're spending all your time paying the interest back. And that's how poor people really get boxed in to these long-term loans that were supposed to be very simple and just for a couple of weeks. And it's time that we put a stop to this. I am appalled that we have a legislative body that refused to actually hear this bill last session. Now, it did pass in the state Senate with full bipartisan support, and it went to the House, and the Speaker refused to have it go to a committee. And so that is why this will now be coming to a ballot measure rather than actually being voted in by people who we've elected to make sure that they're protecting the most vulnerable in our community. By the way, you're listening to KBOO Portland, and I am Joanne Bowman, and you are listening to Voices from the Edge. 503-231-8187 is the number to call, Have you had experiences with payday loans? If so, give me a call. Share with our listening audience so people can understand really what the impact of these predatory lending operations are to poor working people in our state. There's another measure that I actually don't have a strong opinion one way or another, but would be very interested in hearing what other people think. And that would be, well, let me take my caller first, and then I'll go to my next ballot measure. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good, thank you.
Excellent.
So, loan sharks, legal loan sharking.
Legal loan sharking.
Yeah. Quite a turnaround kind of deal. Is that, well, it kind of goes to where the power of the people that hold the money now. It looks like this is more of a fleecing of the lower class. And more of a grabbing of the what's left of the monies out there, it looks like. Am I wrong on that? Can't hear you.
It's kind of insidious when you think about that this is the only group of people. It's actually pretty discriminatory when you think about it. It's poor people are the only group of people that there is no limit to the amount of interest you can charge them.
Right.
You know, and that to me, that's just the most offensive part of these operations.
Well, yeah, it seems that the rich are getting richer off the backs of the poor, and they're going about it in every direction that they can, and it just seems that it's really showing the true colors of the upper middle class and
how
my wife is working for Working America,
mm-hmm.
and you know Working America, because
mm-hmm.
I think you're Oregon
Action,
and mm-hmm. she was actually going to be coming over and doing some cross training with you. But she dropped her hours a little bit because we care about our kids a little more than working full time so much. But I was actually looking forward to having her meet you. But
me too.
Yeah,
I've heard good things. Her name is Kate, right?
Her name is April.
April. Okay.
April, and she worked with Working America, and she was actually wanting to come over, and I was hoping that she still will. But she's out every night working for the people of the poor, working for the underprivileged, and she's been telling me things where. You know, she walks up to these doors of these people in these huge six-digit homes, and they're turning around and going, well, we don't care about the kids.
Oh.
Or and this one guy, she walked in, she says, you know, I don't care about the school system. I'm in my house. I'm making big money. I don't care because I'm in my bubble.
Mm-hmm.
In my car, I go from my house to my car to my office,
mm-hmm.
and they just kind of drive right through it. It's kind of like when you see those caravans of the presidents going through the third world countries.
Exactly.
They don't hear it. They don't smell it. They don't feel it. But yet, they're right there taking bites and pieces from it.
You know, you are so true. And it's like when you think about, I mean, I was appalled when I used to see business interests coming to the legislature demanding huge tax breaks, and at the same time they'd say, but we need a quality education system. And I had this line that I always used, and I always said, what are you willing to give up to ensure that we have a quality education system?
They're not willing to give anything up.
And not one of them ever had anything that they were willing to give up to ensure that we had a quality education system.
Well, and now you can start seeing it's not just quality education. How about just quality of life? It just seems we're going down and down and down, and they just keep getting bigger and bigger. And the whole problem with this generation of the rich and the famous is they're hoarding their cash.
Yes.
Everything in the past was all about flowing it out and watching everybody prosper. Now it's so few and so limited. They're just hoarding it and hoarding it and living in these big homes, miserable. And everybody and I've been watching, I'm not to plug this stupid show or not, but this Swapping Wives deal. They show these wives, the lesser, going driven into that lower chakra, that lower consciousness of the undersoul that says, I need to survive and I want everything to do it.
You know, let me ask you this question now. So what do you think it's going to take to get people back in the frame of mind that we're kind of all in this together? We either all make it or we all sink.
We need to flood the systems. We need to flood the airways. We need to start educating through getting into people's homes. And the only way that you're going to get into the homes is what you and Working America are doing and what BrainStew does on a monthly basis. It's hard to walk on come up to the door and go, knock, knock, knock. Can I come in and sit with you for a little while?
Exactly.
But, boy, if you can get through with the media, the television, boy, they're willing to turn that thing on for anything.
Exactly.
So if we can get into their homes, and what's really nice about the media, I hate the media, but it's got a purpose, and I'm using it, and it's getting into the people's homes subconsciously.
Right.
It kind of... little flicker here, a little flicker there, and eventually people start waking up and saying, wow, I'm starting to smell things. I'm starting to see things.
But, you know, I have a sense that we are getting there. We're getting to a point whereas we're getting a mass of people who are starting to look at where this country is headed and saying, I'm not going that way. Because... I think that people are really starting, because, you know, it's like, Congress is like so far away, and people really don't believe that whatever they do in D.C. has an impact on their personal life. Until this reconciliation bill that recently passed Congress passed, I think most people just really had a standoffish approach to what was happening in Congress. But I think that we're starting to make the case on the local level that these decisions are going to have a detrimental impact on the most vulnerable people in our community for years to come. Now, what's interesting to me is that the traditional media has not made the connection between the $40 million cut in social service programs and the $60 billion in tax cuts that's coming for a vote soon Congress.
Joanne, let's not be naive now. Let's look at the real big picture. The reason why you're not seeing it.
I guess I am naive.
let's look at the real picture here. They're not letting you see it because they don't want you, because they're the ones that are grabbing from the poor. They're the ones that are suppressing the poor. They're the ones that are instigating and propelling this forward, or they wouldn't let this happen. And here's one thing that you can do, Joanne, and I can do too. I would like to have you come on my show and talk about this for an hour live with 250 hours of playback time for a month. Okay, so this is on public access. I have 250 hours a month reruns on five different cable stations, and I need to get... somehow, I've been trying to get a hold of you, but I need to get a hold of you, and I don't know how to get a hold of you.
Well, you got me now. why don't you give Richard your contact info?
Okay.
And when I get to the office, I'll call you. I'd love to come on your cable access show.
That would be great.
And talk about how we really mobilize folks, because whether we like it or not, there's another election coming, and we must be... making sure that we've got the most educated voter pool out there.
That's right. And one last thing before I let you go, you're a beautiful person. I really commend you for what you're doing. I look up to you. We need to hold our Congress and senators accountable.
Yes.
You're saying Congress is so far away. We need to bring back our representatives back to our state.
Yes.
And we must have a monthly discussion with our senators and congressmen as round tables. We must do little, what are they called when Bush comes to those places and they do little forums?
Oh, yeah, town halls.
Some town halls. We need Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith in some town halls because we elected them.
Yes.
They must listen to us, and if they don't listen to us, they must be gone. And we cannot have chameleons. Chameleons are what is killing us. Democrats coming in as Republicans coming in as Democrats.
Exactly.
How about coming in as an individual on an even keel saying, I believe in the people.
Right.
So
I'm
with you. We need to hold them over the fire. We need to call them back to the state, Joanne, and get them here to talk to them and have them listen to us.
You know, I'm there with you, and I know that we're going to be doing a series of forums later this year, and we certainly want to have both of our senior senators to be held accountable, because I must say that that Senator Wyden does not always vote right, and Senator Smith doesn't always vote wrong.
Well, is there a right and a wrong, or does not vote for the people, but
well,
they're only voting for their ideals?
That's my criteria. That's my criteria. My criteria has nothing to do with party affiliation. My criteria is, what is the impact of their vote on the people in the state that they say they represent?
Or their grandchildren.
Or their grandchildren.
And they're not seeing the grandchildren suffering in the next 20 years. So let's hold these people accountable. And there's one last thing. Blumenauer, he's on our side. He's a good man, and Blumenauer is pushing hard. He's the silent angel, and we need to back this man and,
you know,
help him out.
That's the one thing I'll disagree with you on.
Really?
Blumenauer has one of the safest seats in Congress. Why is he not more vocal? Why is he not standing up? I don't hear Blumenauer.
Well,
Blumenauer's not loud enough.
Right, and if we back him and start coming up and saying, we're going to back you and we want to, because I've been seeing some things he's been sending to me in the mail, in the emails and stuff, about some of these forest initiatives and
stuff.
Right,
right.
He's the man we really need to start propping up and saying, I think he could be our key to the doorknob. We really look around, but I'm not sure yet. I'm just kind of putting that out there.
Well, I'll keep an open mind, but I think we need radical leaders. We need leaders that are going to stand up for what's right for the people of Oregon. And unfortunately, nobody that we currently have in those positions has the backbone to actually stand up consistently, because, you know, there's no right party in Congress. That, you know, they both do really, really stupid things. Unfortunately, the party that's in power now has consistently, it's like no matter what they do, it has been detrimental to the overall health of this country. So thank you so much for your
call. How do I get a hold of you?
Give Richard your number. Richard's going to take your phone number and your email, and I'll get in contact with you when I get to the office.
Cool, and it's people like me and you and everybody listening on this radio that's going to make a difference. And so we need to back our people in our public access television and public access to radio, and we really need to stand tall for ourselves, because we only have to look at ourselves for letting ourselves down.
You got it.
So take care, and
thank
you. I'll talk to him in a minute.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. So the next ballot measure I wanted to spend some time talking about is the One Oregon, One Ballot. You may remember that this initiative, the chief's petitioners are Phil Kiesling and Norma Paulus, both former secretaries of states in the state of Oregon. This initiative would create a primary election system whereby there would not, that there would not be party affiliation on the ballot. So what would happen would be anybody that's running, let's say, like for the state house, of representatives, everybody would run in the primary, and the top two finishers in the primary would move on to the general election. The idea of this is that it would open up the primary system so that independents and other non-affiliated voters would be able to participate in the primary system. The reasoning behind this measure basically states that that Oregon really should be in the forefront of opening up the political process so that more people will have the ability to participate. I don't have a strong opinion one way or another on this. On one hand, I think if it does away with the partisan bickering, then maybe it would be a good thing. However, there are some parts of the state. This could, in fact, end up increasing the cost of elections, because in many places, the primary is the election. So once the primary happens, that election is over. And this scenario being proposed by Phil Kiesling and Norma Paulus, that means that you would actually have a primary and a general election for every legislative seat every election cycle. I believe that that would, in fact, increase the cost of elections and not actually do more to increase participation. But I could be wrong, and I'm open to somebody telling me I'm wrong about this particular measure. And so I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to K-Boot.
Hey, good morning. Thanks
good morning.
For taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to talk about the loan sharks, and one of your last caller was talking about the you know, the distance between the poor and the rich, and how the rich seem to be getting richer on the backs of the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's an overall quality of life issue for everybody here. And when we have all these welfare reform programs, we have all these programs that are encouraging people to take on more and more responsibility, yet we aren't giving them the tools to continue to support themselves and their families and the community, it really does create a big problem and a really difficult situation for these really hard-working single families in our area. And I think it's a civic duty for us to raise the minimum wage and give people more opportunity to helping people with low interest loans is actually a good thing for us all.
Exactly.
The whole community and our whole society, and allows us as a city and as a group and as a nation and however you want to define us to grow as people and create healthier communities. And to me, this is the first time where our children have learned ways that are lessening their lifespan, shortening their time. Everyone's driving through drive-throughs. The quality of life is much lower. And no one has any, I feel as though people don't take the civic responsibility, no time aside from working all day, to really get out there and see where you can fit in beyond trying to make, you know, a minimum wage.
You know, you raised some really good points, because, I mean, if you only read the traditional media, you would think that what we have is a whole bunch of lazy people who don't work and just want. And so this public image that we've allowed folks to create of what poor people look like is absolutely false. You know.
Well, we've ended the dialogue. We've pushed them to be independent, yet we've not taken the responsibility from a legislative side and offered them the opportunity to continue working to empower themselves and become independent.
Exactly, to get more education, to be able to get a couple of dollars put away so you can get a better car, so you can get to a better job, et cetera, et cetera. All those things that help build community, and we seem to have taken on this mindset that the president expounds, which is this individualism, you know, every man or woman for him or herself. But we know community works better if we're working together cooperatively to create the kind of community we want to live in.
Well, and it's ever apparent as we are all struggling so much to figure out why we're having so many problems, why so many people in our community are sick with cancer and disease, and it's because the dialogue stopped and we're not finding the common links for our problems anymore.
You know, you're so right. I really appreciate your call, because I absolutely agree with you. I think, I mean, I've been absolutely convinced that most of us, what we find is that we've got many more things in common. So let's work on those commonalities and build bridges there.
And to build off that, I was watching the State of the Onion the other night, and it seemed to me there was a very broad black and white picture being painted, whereas my interpretation of the country and of the people that I know was very diverse, and no one that I knew could quite fit into this black and white picture. Yet when you paint such a black and white view of the world, it's very easy to you know, have a strong agenda that you're pushing forward.
Right.
So it seems as though as we have a democracy, as we have a dialogue, as we invite people into our community and start to focus on what are the real problems and solutions for those problems, it's hard to understand how that's creating progress. But just the act of doing so allows us to slow down and get in touch with the biorhythms of the world and become better people and recognize that there's other interpretations, other religions, other colors of skin. And that's actually something to celebrate and reward ourselves with.
Well, good for you. It's wonderful to hear someone say the same thing all the time so eloquently. Thank you so much. I appreciate your call
and
this morning.
Just to add anyone from any party, I read an article, and I'm not sure from where, that that was actually restricting access from, or they opened up the voter elections, or they're putting in legislation for whatever you're
right, right. There's a ballot measure that would create this open primary system.
And I heard that actually was restricting access to a certain part of, you know, for independents, they couldn't actually get on the ballot now.
Oh, under that system or under the current system?
I
think
I'm
it's under
sure.
the current
Maybe
system.
Maybe someone else will have much more information.
Okay.
I'll look for that article.
All right. Well, we'll keep talking about that. Thank you so much for your
Great.
Call.
Well, thanks for being here and have a wonderful day.
You too. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You're listening to Joanne Bowman, Voices from the Edge. And we're talking about ballot measures that will be coming to a ballot near you. The gentleman was referring to the open primary initiative that would eliminate the parties in the primary election process. And I'm not really sure how I feel about it. On one hand, there are a lot of people that I really respect who think this is a good thing. But my big concern initially, as I said, was just my concern about it increasing the cost of elections, as if elections aren't expensive enough already. I believe that opening up the primary in this manner would actually add to an already very, very expensive system. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Well, hey, Joanne. How are you? This is LJ. How you been?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
Excellent. Thank you very, very much. Okay, just a couple of things to touch on.
Okay.
Let's talk about the payday loan, Shylock. All right, for a second.
Okay.
You know, according to Dan Meek, annually, these guys make 600% profit.
Ooh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, they make 600% interest on the money that they loan, okay? There was some bill before the legislature to cut that shameless profit down to 300%, all right?
Right.
But you know what happened, Joanne? The payday loan industry came riding into town
right.
with $144,000 in their pocket, and they spread this money around where it'll do the most good.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, now I'm not knocking our state legislature, but apparently the state legislature was so peeved about this $144,000 that they decided not even to to put this legislation on the table.
What?
You know,
it did in fact pass in the state Senate
uh-huh.
by a supermajority vote.
Right.
The Speaker of the House
uh-huh.
wouldn't even send it to a committee.
I know. I knew that. So you don't suppose the $144,000 that they spread around had anything to do with this, do you?
Oh, of course not. I'm
nah.
sure. No. In fact, I was actually appalled that some of the legislators who didn't support what I thought was like real common sense kind of legislation, and their response was, well, the industry says if we limit the interest rate, then there would be significant job loss in the industry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I asked a particular legislator, are you telling me that you believe that the people working behind the counter are making anything more than minimum wage? Are you telling me that they actually have a living wage job working Ooh. For a predatory lending organization?
I wonder if they get health coverage.
Yeah, I bet their health coverage is the Oregon Health Plan.
Really, really.
It's pretty sad, isn't it?
Well, no, it's pretty indicative of like what's going on. I mean, I don't want to paint our state government with a broad brush, but apparently they are for sale. And you know what we call people who are for sale? I don't want to say it.
No, you're making me blush, and we haven't even said the word.
No,
but
no,
yes,
I do not want to say it on the air. And again, I am certain that I'm all of the people who supposedly represent us
right.
Have our best interest at heart.
Well, and you know, I want to make sure that as we move into this election season, that we're not letting these folks off the hook with these little 15, 30-second sound bites that we normally let them off the hook with. I support public education. I want a quality community. You know, I want to know specifically, what legislation are you introducing? What are you going to spearhead to make this community better? What are going to be your top priorities? Who are the people you're going to partner with to make it happen? And what can we expect at the end of next legislative session that we didn't get at the end of this one? You know, I have some real specific questions that I want them to answer. And I think we all should be asking very specific questions, because it's kind of hard to hold somebody accountable to wishy-washy statements.
Oh, geez, Joanne, you know what they're going to do. They're going to push all of the hot-button issues. And they're going to totally avoid dealing with the issues at hand.
You know, I'm surprised that we're that stupid, that we keep letting them do that to us. I mean, haven't we been around long enough to know that developing these so-called hot-button issues is a distraction, it's a diversion, it's a way to keep us occupied on Janet Jackson's breasts as compared to what's happening in our local community? I mean, don't we get that already?
You see, these guys are very, very slick. They already know what they have to do in order for us to vote against our own best interests.
Right.
They've done it repeatedly, and we fall for the same thing time and time again.
Over and over again. And like this election cycle, I am really fearful, because there appears to be a national push against immigration.
Mm-hmm.
And so once again, what you're doing is creating a problem, number one, where there isn't one,
mm-hmm.
and number two, what you're doing is creating a them versus us.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're an immigrant, then somehow you're less than someone who isn't an immigrant. And I was reading something recently that was really showing how there's some segments of our community that are really trying to take people of color communities and divide them around the whole immigration issue, you know, because what they're telling poor black people is, well, you'd be able to get a job if it wasn't for all those illegal immigrants coming in,
sure.
And they're the reason why you're not getting a job. It's not that the manufacturing companies have all moved overseas with significant tax breaks. It's those immigrants. They're the reason why. And, you know, this country did that in the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
When we
were
smack dab in the middle of the civil rights movement.
It's those
people of color that are taking the jobs that now white men can't get, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing all these set-asides for people of color,
mm-hmm.
and they're your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you would think that we would not be making the same mistakes over and over and over again.
Napoleon has been using it forever. Napoleon called it divide and conquer.
Divide and conquer, yeah.
You got it.
You're right about that.
Okay, just another couple of quick things.
Okay.
And then I'll get up here. First things first. The Portland Business Alliance is against public.
Oh, yes.
Public financing. Okay, now I just read this in like Willamette Week this
mm-hmm.
week. Good old Ginny B, who's going to run against Eric, says that she's opposed to public. Financing.
Right.
And she's pretty clear on that.
Yes, she is.
She will not take taxpayers' money.
Right. Yes. However.
However. However, on her mailing list, there's a plea for money that lets you know that if you contribute $50 per person or $100 per couple, you can write this off on your Oregon taxes.
That's right. That's absolutely right. Somebody was telling me about that yesterday.
Oh, my goodness, Jenny. I thought you were against taking public money.
Exactly. So her whole campaign is about why you should not use public money to get elected.
Right.
But on the same homepage of her website,
right.
it encourages people to use the state tax credit,
right.
If they support her candidacy.
Right,
sounds
right.
a little hypocritical, doesn't it?
anyway, since 1969, according to Willamette Week, when this law was enacted, it cost us taxpayers so far $5 million.
Whoa.
I am not judging it, you know, good, bad, right, wrong.
Right.
But this is what it cost this is what's come out of the Oregon taxpayers' pocket since 1969.
But you know what's interesting is so few people take advantage of that tax credit. In fact, it's one of the best ways to get people with not a lot of resources to participate in our political process.
Right on.
But so few people either know about it or utilize it.
Okay.
Which is interesting.
Uh-huh. Just one more quick thing, and I swear.
You say that a lot, don't you? One more quick thing.
Okay. Now, the people who are behind the scenes in First Things First, of course, is Neil.
Right.
Neil G. All right.
Right.
Now, if you follow the money, Mark Dotson from Northwest Natural Gas has already contributed $5,000. Snitcher Steels, John Carter has contributed $3,750. Tom Emerson, $250. But interestingly enough, Tom's wife Laura has collected $40,000, and to McKill this bill. And then, of course, there's our friends at Gard and Gerber.
Oh yes, yes,
who,
yes.
Who has already collected? Who already has $70,707 in their war chest to kill public financing. All right?
Yes.
So follow the money, you guys.
Well, you know, you raise a really good point. I mean, it's like, quite frankly, we couldn't ask for better campaign opponents. Mm-hmm. You know, my organization definitely will be fighting the repeal hook, line, and sinker. But what's hysterical is if you think about, can you imagine the image? Okay, on one side, you've got PGE, you've got Quest, you've got Enron, you've got Portland Business Alliance, you've got the Oregon Restaurant Association. Then on the other side, you have community-based organizations like Oregon Action and ACORN and Coalition for a Livable Future and all these, you know, grassroots, community-based organizations that are saying, you know, we think this is a good system.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't have paid money to have better opponents than we have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeannie Burdick is like the poster child for why big money is corrupting our political system.
Right on.
So it's like, I'm of the opinion, bring it on. I'm ready. I just can't wait because I just think, you know, be careful what you ask for, because if you're really going to put it out there like that, we want to take back our power is really what they're saying.
Uh-huh.
This is a power grab. They like having exclusive access to City Hall.
Yes,
they like
do.
The fact that they get to decide what projects are built and what projects aren't.
Yes, they do, because it lines their pockets.
Yes, it does. It lines their pockets.
It lines their pockets, and those greedy SOBs really couldn't give up behind about ordinary folks.
No, they couldn't, and it's really unfortunate. But you know what? There's many more of us ordinary folks than there are those folks. And hopefully, I'm always optimistic, but I really believe that people are paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And so the more information we can give people, the more educated they're going to be when they cast their ballot.
Right on.
So
okay.
Thank you.
To quote my favorite rock and roll anarchist, The Who, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. So be careful.
Truer words were never spoken. Have a great day.
You too, man. Good talking to you.
Likewise.
Bye-bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. You've been listening to Joanne Bowman. This is Voices from the Edge, and we're talking about what's coming to a ballot near you. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Joanne, for getting great ideas out there and having other people share theirs.
You're very welcome.
I had two comments I wanted to make.
Okay.
I don't have any children.
Uh-huh.
But I think it's beyond selfishness when people who don't have children don't support public schools. I'm really afraid of growing up, well, living in a society, and especially getting old in a society where the people who I have to work with and live with and who will eventually be taking care of me,
mm-hmm.
if they are not educated, what kind of society is that going to be?
Exactly.
You know, I don't want people who are so desperate that the only way that they can earn money is by committing crimes or whatever.
It's a really good point, but you know, I actually think the education funding issue is a little bit more complicated. And I say that because you know, as you know, the legislature is responsible for funding schools.
Uh-huh.
As you know, the Portland metro area is the area that provides the state with the largest amount of revenue. As you know, folks in Multnomah County area have been willing to tax themselves over and over and over again to support a public education system that does not equally educate students throughout the spectrum. And so I'm like, I'm torn. I'm really torn because it's, I think, you know, so we pay our fair share. Then the money gets distributed to other parts of the state. Then we're asked to dig into our pockets again.
And pay more.
Right? And put more money into a system that is failing low-income kids and kids of color consistently over the last 30 years. You know, so I'm really torn. I mean, I don't want to see our school system disintegrate into some of the horrific public school systems that are all over the country. But at the same time, I don't think that there's enough accountability in the system to warrant continuing to put more and more and more money into it without some level of accountability. So I'm torn. I don't have kids in the school system either. And I've supported every tax that's ever been on the ballot for schools.
But there is a limit, isn't there?
Exactly. And there has to be a limit.
Uh-huh.
And I think that there's like some real arrogance taking place at Portland Public Schools, because I remember listening to a school board meeting on cable access before we started talking about what the new tax package could look like, and listening to the school board say, well, the voters will have to pass in the new tax before we can do these new programs, but we're already approving the programs and we're moving ahead as if the assumption is, of course, voters are going to vote in a new tax.
Yeah,
and I thought, how arrogant is that?
Yeah, not a very good assumption either.
Yeah, and it's like, so you're going to create more Spanish immersion programs and you're going to create all these other new programs, and you haven't fundamentally addressed the issue of why so many kids are failing in the current system that you have. And then if you bring it up, you're labeled as being anti-teacher.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not anti-teacher. I've been pro-union my whole life. But I'm also pro-accountability. And so I'm really mixed. It's like, and what we know is that, you know, we got kids graduating this year who have spent their entire public education system in funding crises mode.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some fundamental problems, and I don't think these little quick fixes are the ones that are resolving those fundamental problems with our education system.
I hear you. I had another comment I wanted to make about the open primary system.
Uh-huh.
I like a lot of those ideas, but I'm really concerned about the courts tossing the whole thing out because it could be unconstitutional as happened up in Washington.
Oh, really? I wasn't aware that Washington State had something similar.
They had an open primary system that was the Supreme Court throughout. I don't know if it was the Washington Supreme Court or the federal Supreme Court. I wish I was more on top of that. But
well, since elections are normally state, I would assume it was probably the state court.
That could be. But my understanding is that the feds have, in the past, thrown out open primaries on the basis that a free association, that parties have a right to have closed primaries and choose who they want to put on the ballot. So, although I think the ideas are good, I just don't know if it's really going to work under our present constitutional system or not.
Well, that's a really good question, because this is, in fact, a statutory change. So I'm thinking that they probably weigh the pros and cons of doing statutory versus constitutional change and decided that they would go to a statutory change. You raise a good point. I mean, for me, the whole question was, will this, in fact, increase the cost of elections? Because, as you may have heard me say earlier, in many parts of our state, the primary is really the election. So are you creating a system whereby now, in every legislative district in the state, you now are spending big money for a primary election, and you also now have to spend big money for a general election?
Well, do you know how much of the budget the election is?
How much of the budget?
Yeah.
What do you mean? Well, it depends on what part of the state you live in, how much money you have to raise and spend to get elected to the legislature. So, like, for instance...
Oh, you're talking about the money for campaigning and
yes,
all
yes,
that.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, I see.
Exactly.
Oh, I was thinking of just the
you
cost
were thinking
of the government.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No. I'm thinking the other side.
Okay. That makes more sense.
Yeah, what happens on the ground. So, like, right now, you know, there must be out of 60 House districts, there's got to be about 30 of them that take place in the primary, you know, and then the general is just, you know, the general really is non-existent, right, because the other party could never get elected in those particular areas. So the primary, for all intents and purposes, is the end of the election season. And then now what happens is those people who win those primaries go and help other candidates in their general.
Uh-huh.
And so under this system, you would have everybody focused on two elections that I think would just, you know, that just raise the cost. I mean, right now, it's amazing to me to think that...
We're kind of going through that already, though, aren't we? I mean...
Well, there's some parts of the state, like in Beaverton. I mean, in order to be a state legislator representing Beaverton, you need to have about $300,000 to win your seat. Now, and keep in mind, this is for a seat that pays less than $1,400 a month.
Well, those people who are getting into those offices often aren't doing it solely for, well, they're certainly not doing it
for the money.
Salary.
Right. Which means that it really limits who can serve,
mm-hmm.
because very few people could afford to work for $1,400 a month. And so who gets to run and then serve was the people who can afford to live on $1,400 a month, which means they've got other income, or they're retired, or they work for a big corporation who would love to have somebody in the legislative body representing them.
Well, I'm going to get off the line. I've got a lot of noise on my line.
Okay, well, it's been great talking to you. You have a fabulous day.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9, Dave Mazza hosts Oregon Notebook with guest Mike Leachman of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. He wrote the center's State of Working Oregon report. He has also researched corporate taxes, Oregon tax breaks, hunger, and public assistance programs. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. And it's part three of Destruction of the World Trade Center, a lecture by David Ray Griffin, author of The New Pearl Harbor. At 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie Bernard interviews painter Rebecca Gerbman Bloom, currently showing work at the Woolery Gallery. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, more on the controversy over the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad. That's what's coming up today on KBOO. Good morning, caller. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey, Joanne.
Hey.
All right. Hey, look, I want to get back on that health care thing you talked about, but at the same time, I want to deal with the mentality in this society that put people in situations that they are in medically.
Right.
First of all, there's something ironic about a society that we live in where animals at the zoo have better health care than most people on the street. Now, something strange about that. There's something strange about the fact that animals in this society have been elevated to a status to where they must be fed, they must be cared for, they must be treated in such a way that is over and above the attention that is paid to people.
Yes.
Now, there's something wrong. Now this got to be a European thing. It's got to be a European thing to where there's people out there that spend most of their energy and funds on the upkeep and the health situation of animals and walk past a person on the street that's down and out. Now, if you want to start dealing with health care situation in this society, then somehow we're going to have to address that type of mentality.
I think you're absolutely right. And not taking anything against animal lovers, but you're right. I've had that experience myself. I've had people call and they're absolutely outraged over something that happens to an animal and will step over people on the street and be offended that they have the audacity to be on the same street with them.
Now, that's all I'm saying. If we're going to try to change the health care thing, then somehow, you know, I listen to progressives that come on your station.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll spend
like
a whole
term.
Show.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Are you there?
I'm here. Uh-huh.
They'll spend a whole show talking about the social conditions of other countries. And I say to myself, well, why don't you spend, and they won't even go in the inner cities. They won't even take a trip down to Louisiana where people are suffering. But they'll spend a whole show talking about they were in another country and what's going on in other countries. And they ought to be taking that effort and trying to solve things here. I hear people, progressives, come on your station and want to talk about trees and animals. And they're not trying to put that collective thought together and try to figure out how to solve the social condition of man here. That's just my complaint.
I don't disagree with you at all. I certainly don't, and I appreciate you calling and pointing out those inconsistencies and the work that we do. But, you know, I mean, and I think we have to do it all, quite frankly. I mean, but I'm with you. I mean, if the choice is between, if it comes down to, I think every person deserves a quality, clean place to stay. I mean, that's like just like a basic value system. Everybody deserves a basic level of health care. You know, there's some basic fundamental things that everybody in this country, in this state, should have access to. And if we're not working towards making that happen, then we're making it worse.
But see, Joanne, what I think that you don't understand, because I listen to you a lot, and you're idealistic. What you don't understand is you don't understand the European mind, which when you come on your show and you're trying to get things changed,
right?
Really what you're always trying to go up against is a mentality.
Hmm.
It's a mentality that you're trying to combat all the time. It's sort of like that situation. Well, let me just break it down another situation to you.
All right.
First of all, you talk about the president wants people to have throw everybody out, each man to themselves.
Right.
That's only true to a certain degree because too much of that creates anarchy. And certainly the president and the Republicans don't want anarchy out here. So when you have too much individuality, you're going to have anarchy. So you got to have people, man, in step, and you got to have people be in control. So they don't want too much individualism. So you got to understand that. I'm trying to help you here.
Well, so, you know what? I want to invite you to come and co-host with me one day. Would you be willing to do that?
I'd be willing to do that because, you know, I'm ready to help anybody, man, deal with the European mind, because that's what you're up against.
All right. Well, you know, what I'm going to ask you to do is give your contact information to Richard, and I'll give you a call and try to schedule something for you to come on next month.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
You have a good one.
You do the same.
All right.
I'll look forward to it. You know, before we finish off today, I wanted to spend a couple of minutes talking about some real icons that have left our world in the last couple of months. And one especially, Coretta Scott King, as you know, was buried earlier this week. But another equally important person who is no longer with us was Richard Pryor. And I want to bring both of them to your attention because both did some incredible education of broader community about the issues and the concerns of African American community members. They both were educators, and they both were eloquent spokespeople on the conditions and the desires of a community of people that were attempting to achieve a level of equality. And you may find it interesting that I would put Coretta Scott King and Richard Pryor in the same type of acknowledgement, but Richard Pryor did through humor what Coretta Scott King did in a very serious manner, but both went a long, long way towards giving a broader community a better understanding of the experiences and the vision and the values that the African American community had. And so it doesn't go unnoticed by me as I watch some of the people that I watched when I was a very young child and listened to and read about over these years. It's really not lost on me kind of who's coming up behind these icons. And I have to say, there seems to be a void. There seems to be a void of people who have the courage and the compassion to be able to talk to a large number of peoples and talk directly to their heart. We're losing some significant icons in our community, and I can't help but wonder who's going to step up, who's going to take their places. Where's the next Coretta Scott King going to come from? Where's the next Richard Pryor going to come from? And if we're not preparing the next Coretta Scott King, the next Richard Pryor, then what an empty community we're going to be living in without those kind of voices that really represent true life experiences of folks who have walked in these steps for many, many years. And so that's my comments on Richard Pryor and Coretta Scott King. And just who's next? That's my question. Who's going to fill in those spots? We've got just a couple of minutes left, so I'm going to go back to the phone line and ask you to be short, sweet, and to the point, please. Good morning, caller. Welcome to K-Boo.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
A couple of months ago, I called and voiced some objection to public financing of campaigns. You remember that?
I'm sorry, you called about what?
Public financing, you know, the system we have here in Portland for raising funds for...
Uh-huh.
You remember that?
Well, I remember talking about it a lot, yes.
I did. So my complaint was that radio airwaves, television and radio companies have this obligation to... they're like chartered, or those airwaves are leased, and they have to sign agreements about... and I made a point about, you know, personal or public service announcements.
Right, right.
And I argued that that wasn't enough, really, for what they're getting.
True.
And that really our public campaigns, our elections are so important that... What these radio, and especially radio, right-wing radios, they abuse that right by, you know, hosting talk show people who demonize the opposition before a radio listening audience that they've coerced into, you know, ingratiated into believing a biased view.
Exactly.
And so I didn't think it was fair that public fundings is used to put on ads on these radio and televisions that that other outside of the little ad time that you have to pay for, they're going to demonize just because they own the airwaves. And so I that's an argument I think should be a part of the debate, right? You guess?
No, I said yes.
Oh, yes.
I didn't guess.
Okay. Okay. So you understand. So I want to call in and amend that position a little bit. My position of that, okay?
Okay.
Well, now, I think that campaigns have expenses that could be covered by public funding. Office, paper, designing mailers, you know, distributing flyers. Those expenses could be covered by public funding, or as we've got here. But when it goes to putting money directly in the hands of right-wing radio corporation liars like Lars Larson, you know,
uh-huh.
He's a deceiver. That guy.
Well, yeah, he is.
He is.
Yeah.
And
so I mean, I'm going to have to cut you. What's your point? We're getting minus on minutes. So
you got to broaden the debate so that you won't be just paying these guys to turn right around and deceive their audience about people running for election. It's not right. The bigger argument is the media is controlling the outcomes of elections by the way they're able to present biased views. And pay them for this? I don't think so.
Well, you know, we're going to have to talk about that more because we're going to be out of town, out of time today, but that sounds
right.
like a great topic for another show.
Okay, just going to get that out there.
I'm glad you did because, you know, the reality is like Lars Larson is not a public radio station. It's a privately owned company.
But it goes over public airwaves.
Yes, it does, and that's why we're going to have this conversation another day.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Thank you for calling. You have a fabulous day.
Fabulous. It's sunny out today, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's sunny out.
Yeah, hey, it's a sunny day.
All
it's
right,
a little cold, but you have
that.
A great day, okay?
You too.
Thanks for the call.
Yep.
And I think we've got one more caller on the line there. Good morning, caller. Welcome to K-Boo. You get to be the last voice other than mine, of course. Please be short, sweet, and to the point.
Yes, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Three short, sweet things. First
okay.
of all, the Oregon Bus Project is a great way to advocate for legislative issues. It's fun and it's effective. Secondly, Coretta Scott King's and Richard Pryor's are out there, just the media won't let them be heard. Thirdly, I think you're doing divide and conquer when you pit animal rights people and environmentalists against human rights people. Studies show that they're closely linked in people abusing animals and people abusing people, and we need to all get on the same team rather than put each other on different teams, and we really are all on the same team here, and animal rights people are the most likely people to advocate for human rights, and please keep that in your heart and in your mind.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you. You are short, sweet, and to the point, and I appreciate it. Have a fabulous day. Well, you've been listening to Joanne Bowman. You've been listening to Voices from the Edge. It is my hope that you've got some information that will inform your voting for the various ballot measures that we talked about and will inspire you to actually go and educate yourself about the issues that are really going to impact you. I'm a big fan of saying that everybody should vote like their life depends on it, because it does. The last announcement I want to make, if you don't already have this date on your calendar, Sunday, March 19th will be a rally in March. It will be a End the War, Begin the Peace March. There are a bucket load of organizations that are supporting this effort. For more information or to co-sponsor or endorse, you can contact the Peace and Justice Works at 503-238-3065. That's 503-238-3065. And the very last thing I'd like to say is the gentleman that I asked to co-host, if he would please call K Boo at the front desk. We're sorry you got cut off, but I really do want to connect with you and have you come on and share a show with me. Have a great day. This has been Joanne Bowman, Voices from the Edge. See you next week, same time, same place, same channel.
Good morning. This is the Thursday Morning Radio Zine for February 9th, Thursday. Coming up this morning on KABU at 9, Dave Mazza hosts, well, that's coming up next year, hosts Oregon Notebook with guest Mike Leachman of the Oregon Center for Public Policy. He wrote their State of Working Oregon report. He also has researched corporate taxes, Oregon state tax breaks, hunger, and public assistance programs. At 9:30, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 10, it's part 3 of Destruction of the World Trade Center, a lecture by David Ray Griffin, author of The New Pearl Harbor. At 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie Bernard interviews painter Rebecca Guberman-Bloom, currently showing work at the Woolley Gallery. And at 11 on Democracy Now!, more on the controversy over the publication of cartoons depicting the Prophet Muhammad.